You have reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, my name's Ian, and I was just curious about duct tape, because there's facts, alleged facts that say duct tape can fix everything, maybe perhaps every little thing. So I was just curious about the extent of the things that duct tape can fix.
Hello.
Hey, Ian, it's Flora from Every Little Thing.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. So, have you experimented with extreme duct tape fixes?
Well, the most weird thing that I used it for was a potato cannon. I taped it together and it withstood the explosion of the potato cannon, so I thought that was pretty impressive.
Exercising your Second Amendment right to shoot potatoes.
That's right. Homemade cannons.
How far did the potato go?
About a football field.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a blast.
So how would you characterize duct tape in the world of tape? Like, if you were writing the screenplay, Duct Tape the movie.
Okay.
What's the plot?
Well, I think it would probably have to have Bruce Willis, where he gets shot and then has to wrap himself in duct tape, and it stops the bleeding, and he becomes the hero.
Okay, Ian, what do you want to know?
I guess I want to know, what could it actually be used for? Like, how strong can duct tape actually be?
Yes.
If I really needed to, could I craft an airplane with duct tape?
Do you think you could?
In my imagination, I definitely can.
I'm excited to tell you about reality.
I'm excited to hear reality.
So we began by calling Dan Munson.
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Dan develops tapes for 3M, a leading duct tape maker. And Dan said, the reason duct tape is the sporty spice of tapes, I'm paraphrasing, is that it's terrible, waterproof, and extra sticky compared to, say, masking or scotch tape.
Because it has more glue per unit area, you can use it to do a number of odd jobs around the house.
I mean, I think it's probably the most versatile tape there is.
But how sticky is it? That's what we wanted to know. Like, could you use it to stick yourself to the ceiling?
I mean, from experience, I can tell you that you can stick someone to a wall, at least.
I'm going to need a little more info.
So this is kind of embarrassing, but there was one time, I must have been 9 or 10, but I got duct taped to a wall.
Were you off the ground?
Oh, yeah. I stood on a chair while they put tape around me and they pulled the chair away and I was stuck there.
How long were you stuck there?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it was probably 15, 20 minutes, maybe.
That's way longer than I thought.
Especially for a 9-year-old.
That's a long time. Did they leave you?
Well, yeah, they did.
So, Ian, you're not safe yet. Tape expert Dan said that duct tape is sticky enough to hold an adult you to the wall.
Well, sure. It's just a matter of square footage. Because we measure that force, its ability to bond per inch, and it's pretty healthy. It's 5-10 pounds per inch. So naturally, all you have to do is increase the area that's under peel, and you can hold anything.
Okay.
So we also wondered about the strength of duct tape. Like, if you were to hold an end in each hand, how much force would you have to apply to make it snap? Like, could you use duct tape as a climbing rope?
Right, like a duct tape Rapunzel.
Exactly. And Dan said duct tape is really strong. It would take 40 to 50 pounds of weight to snap a piece of duct tape that's 1 inch wide. So for the Rapunzel scenario,
a 200-pound person would require about a 5-inch wide roll. And I would err on the side of caution and go with a 12-inch wide roll, you know, just to be safe.
Why not?
Come on.
Please do not try this, Ian.
Okay, I won't.
The last thing we wanted to know from Dan was whether duct tape is a four-season tape. Can it be used in the bitter cold?
No, you really begin to have trouble below 40 Fahrenheit.
At that point, the glue doesn't hold as well.
Right.
For heat, its range is more impressive. We asked if you could roast a hot dog on a duct tape skewer.
Can I guess the answer to that?
Please do.
Yes, I believe that you can.
I like your faith in duct tape. The answer is...
No. There are two problems with that. One is in the heat, the duct tape will soften and it'll lose its strength. But here's the bigger problem. The components of this product are flammable, and they would begin either to burn or to begin to off-gas, and the hot dog would not taste good. That is my culinary advice.
But duct tape can withstand boiling water.
Yeah, because there, the temperature 212 Fahrenheit, it could handle that, you know, not for a long period of time. 212 Fahrenheit is not that hot for those components.
Wow. Okay. I would not have guessed that at all.
So what do you think, Ian? Is this changing your view of duct tape?
Well, I would say duct tape is still pretty much just as useful as I thought.
It sounds like we haven't knocked your socks off yet.
Yeah, but I bet there could be something more that would blow my socks off.
You bet right. I think we have exactly the story that will blow your socks off.
It was like a razor blade cut them. Like 6 inches long razor blade cuts.
When we told this story to Dan, his socks combusted.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Oh, wow. And that's coming from an expert. So I'm all ears. I'm ready to hear this.
Let me introduce you to Gary LaRose.
I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I'm playing with my dog right now.
What kind of dog?
Little black lab. He's only 3 months old. He is a crazy little Anyway.
Gary owns a hunting lodge out on the Alaska Peninsula. It's that long arm.
Right.
That comes off of Alaska and stretches out towards Japan.
Yeah, way up there.
Remote, huge mountains, lots of big game.
Brown bear, moose.
And Gary's hunting lodge is where the duct tape saga unrolls.
Story begins 2009. We were hunting moose in September. We killed our last moose, I think, around the 18th, 19th.
And Gary has moose meat hanging in his meat shed.
Got a back window that opens up and air can blow through it. And this cool air this time of year just really ages this meat if he tenderizes it.
I feel like that would just attract all the bears.
Well, funny you should say that, because Gary said, I'm paraphrasing here, the meat shed brings all the bears to the yard.
They have all that meat right there, and then they can smell it, they can see it, and it's just, you know, it's just overwhelming to them.
That's so. Like me at a cheese plate.
Is that right? Okay. We all have our weaknesses.
Gary's meat shed had a weakness, too. The electric fence that keeps bears away was out of service. And one night, a visitor showed up looking for takeout.
And the meat is hanging on rafters right inside this back window.
How much meat should I be imagining?
Okay, well, a hind quarter of a moose is going to weigh about 125 pounds.
Ian, picture a cartoon character snatching a pie off a windowsill.
Looks around, makes sure no one else is watching, reaches his big bear claws in.
Takes out 125 pounds of moose meat and tears it apart.
Jeez.
I clean all the meat up out of the meat shed, put it in the freezer, and, you know, figure I'm good.
But he's probably not good, is he?
Hold on to your socks, Ian. A couple days later, Gary gets a human visitor, the son of an old friend.
My name is Luke Miller, and I'm a pilot and a hunting and fishing guide.
Hey, Luke.
Luke flies a little ultralight plane in Alaska. It goes like 75 miles per hour, fabric exterior.
Oh, like the classic one you see in the wilderness movies.
Yeah, exactly. And on one September day, Luke's little plane hit a wall of wind. So he made an unscheduled stop at Gary's.
It was blowing too hard to go where I was going to go. So I stopped at Gary's and he served me a nice dinner. And it was perfect. It was like everything was golden.
Golden. That's how the visit started. So Luke tied down his plane for the night over by the meat shed. and then he goes to bed. Ian, how are your socks?
They're okay. They're still on my feet.
Early the next morning, it's still dark out. The sun isn't up.
And one of my guys came over and says,
Gary, you better come look at this plane.
Uh-oh.
I got my headlamp on and I went out and I started looking at Luke's airplane. And I was like, man, I got to tell Luke this.
I feel like my socks are starting to come off my body a little bit.
Loose around the toes?
They're wiggling off.
So Gary wakes up Luke to tell him his airplane has a problem.
Luke says, well, can I fix it and get going? And I said, slowly, I said, no, I don't think you're going to fix it and get going. I just said, you need to go look at it.
The tires were slashed.
It was like a razor blade cut them. Like 6 inches long razor blade cuts.
The tail was messed up as if some large lumbering creature had sat on it.
Oh my gosh.
The fuselage was shredded.
Not only ripped the sheds, but the fabric was literally ripped off the airplane. I mean, imagine the side of your car. You know, one minute you got a door and you have sheet metal on, and the next minute you're looking at the frame of it.
The bear had come back.
Oh, no.
The whole thing looked like the bear just got totally pissed at the fact that there was nothing there for him to eat. He'd been foiled, and this is my revenge.
Well, I can't say I haven't felt that way about not having food when I want it.
This is like extreme hanger.
Absolutely. I don't know if I'd slash up an airplane, but put me in the right place at the right time. I might just do it.
I want to show you a picture so you can fully comprehend the devastation.
Okay.
We'll put it on our Instagram too. Search for ELT show.
Oh my God. That is crazy. It looks like it just got hit with a train right through the middle. Poor Luke. I'm sorry, Luke.
This is the last thing that any pilot ever wants to hear, that his airplane's damaged to the point where you can't even fly it.
On top of that, this is the plane Luke learned to fly in when he was 14 years old. He had bought it off his dad, and it was his livelihood.
It wasn't a fun experience at all.
Well, he had to fix it somehow.
He had a plan going within a couple hours. He was on the phone and ordered a bunch of stuff, duct tape being right up there on top of the list.
Luke's plan required 18 rolls of duct tape.
I have to know how he did this.
I think we should just send you the after picture.
Okay. Oh, wow. Oh, so he just wrapped the whole plane up. That is insane. And he flew. He flew like that.
He did. He went through all the hoops and got a permit to fly it back to Anchorage where he'd be able to get it fixed. And then he made the 5.5-hour journey in a duct taped burrito.
I stopped along the way and made sure everything was holding together and it was fine. I think I stopped in Pilot Point first, and there's a bunch of tourists out there taking pictures of me. Just kind of was like I was shamed, I guess.
Gary, have you ever seen duct tape do anything like that before?
Not to that extent at all. Not even close. That's 50 years of flying up here in Alaska. So
new respect for duct tape.
Yeah, it worked. It functioned well. And as the reason why you're reporting on this is because it worked. It ended well. You know.
What about for the bear? How did it end for the bear?
He got away with his obnoxiousness.
What do you think, Ian?
Do you have another pair of socks? I guess a real question I have is, did he eventually fix it or did he just leave it as a hallmark of his success?
No, he brought it back to Anchorage. He gave it an extreme makeover. And in fact, when we caught up with Luke, he had just landed that very same plane moments before we talked to him.
That is incredible.
And the plane was kind of ready for a rebuild. So the bear made the decision that I needed to rebuild it. It all was meant to be, I guess, in some certain way.
I feel like he could be a combination between Bruce Willis and MacGyver.
Luke could.
Yeah, but I think I would lean more toward MacGyver.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, duct tape is kind of the bread and butter of MacGyvering.
Absolutely.
But duct tape doesn't work in every high-stakes situation.
I wasn't just going to let him die right there in the bowl.
After the break, ELT listeners share their MacGyver stories. Okay, strap on your duct tape seatbelts and secure your socks, because it's Every Little Guyver for the rest of the show.
Hello?
Hey, Hunter. What's your MacGyver story?
Okay, I won a goldfish from the fair when I was pretty young. I would say second or third grade. And several years later, I noticed the fish in his bowl, fins up, waving for help is the best I can describe it. So I saw what was wrong, and he had a piece of the aquarium gravel stuck in his gill. I wasn't just going to let him die right there in the bowl. So I ran into our kitchen and grabbed a plastic straw and scooped Fred out of the bowl, held him in my hand, and just blew really hard on the straw, and the piece of gravel flew out, and I plopped him back in the bowl, and he lived for like 7 or 8 more years.
This is the one instance where a plastic straw has been good for aquatic life.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
How did you even come up with the straw?
I don't know. I guess I had experience like shooting spitwads across 6th grade classrooms, maybe, and that's what did it.
You'd been honing your skills for years.
For years, without even knowing.
Do you always carry a straw now?
I don't always carry a straw, but maybe I should get one of those new metal ones. That way I'll always be prepared.
Yeah, you might need to save a life.
Hello?
Hey, Stacy. I hear you have a summer vacation MacGyver story.
Yeah, we went to the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, and this resort had a beach. So we went down, and there were people barbecuing, and there were kids playing volleyball. My mom bribed me $5 to play because I was shy.
How old were you at the time?
So it was the summer before my freshman year of high school.
Okay.
First ball I hit, shanked it, went right into the lake. And all these kids just looked at me, and they said, "You hit it, you get it." And I was like, okay.
Okay, so far this sounds like a nightmare.
I know. I mean, I'm looking at all these kids thinking, well, I've got to do it because, you know, they're telling me I have to go get the ball. And I'm watching it drift farther and farther. And so we found this piece of styrofoam. It was only big enough for me to sit on my knees.
Like just a random piece of styrofoam?
Yeah, it was like trash. Like someone just left a piece of styrofoam on the beach. So I'm on this piece of styrofoam paddling, and it's going farther away. I finally get to it.
What are you paddling with?
A stick. So it is like a piece of a tree branch.
This has to be very slow moving.
Yeah, it felt like it took me 30 minutes to get there, although I'm sure it didn't. But I got the ball. I think I tucked it right on my knees, and I'm paddling back, and it's taking forever. And all the kids are laughing at me, saying I'm going to fall in. I'm not wearing my swimsuit. My older brother was there, so there was one person I knew. And that, as soon as I got close enough to the dock, I tossed the ball to my brother. And right at that instant, the whole dock collapsed. And it was like slow motion. I mean, the dock went down. The kids are screaming. The water flew everywhere. Parents are freaking out, pulling kids out of the water. And that styrofoam saved me because then I just paddled to shore, and I was the only one dry. So that's my MacGyver story.
Do you think that it was the weight of the volleyball that was the straw that broke the dock, that broke the dock's back?
I've never thought about it that way, but it had to have been. The dock collapsed as soon as my brother caught it.
Hello?
Ashley, I hear you have a high-stakes rescue story for us.
Absolutely, I do. I was driving on one of, like, the bigger roads. I live in South Florida, so everything's kind of a big road down here. And a little chihuahua came bolting across the four lanes of traffic. I almost hit him with my car. Thankfully, I was able to stop in time, but I jumped out of the car.
You abandoned your vehicle.
Well, I pulled it over to the side of the road, but essentially, yes.
Okay.
And I chased him around for about 45 minutes before he cornered himself behind a dumpster.
He's running from you.
Oh, yeah. As fast as he can go. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever experienced a chihuahua before, but they're basically a ball of anxiety and fear.
So why were you chasing this ball of anxiety and fear? What did you hope to get out of this?
You know, I've been like this since I was a kid. I've rescued ducklings, and I've always bring home, like, stray cats. And so something in me was just like, I have to save him. So I keep trying to catch him, but he's got really sharp teeth and he keeps trying to nip at me.
I feel like we're getting to the MacGyver moment. What did you do?
So I look down at my shoe and I notice that my laces are long enough to where I can take them out of the shoe completely and turn them into like one of those slip leashes.
Let me just get this straight. You're by a stinky, disgusting dumpster and you think to yourself, let me take my shoe off.
Yep. I was a veterinary technician for a couple years, and we used to use these slipknot leashes. So I just kind of visualized that with my shoelace and created it.
You lassoed him with your shoelace.
Absolutely. I lassoed him. And as soon as I put it on him, he wasn't aggressive anymore, and he walked into the car.
Did you adopt him?
Yes. His name is Rocco. He lives with my dad and another little chihuahua named Paco.
Oh, my God. Paco and Rocco. All right, Ashley, send Rocco our regards.
Sure, I'll give him a couple treats for you.
Hello, this is David.
Hey, David. I hear you have a camping MacGyver story for us.
That is correct. So my high school friends and I have been going on this annual camping trip in Northern California for over 10 years at this point. And one of the traditions of our camping trip is blasting 104.1 The Hawk Classic Rock 24 hours a day.
Here comes classic rock and nothing but classic rock from 104.1 The Hawk.
That sounds really restful and like you're really enjoying nature on these camping trips.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what it is. We like to, you know, enjoy nature turned up to 10.
I'm sure your neighbors at the campground feel the exact same way.
Well, that's part of, yeah. So our traditional spot is intentionally you have to hike in a mile and you're nowhere near anybody for that and several other reasons that I won't get into.
I'm intrigued, but fine.
And a few years back, we couldn't go to our normal camping spot. So we had to figure out a new place to go to. And the radio reception doesn't come through. So we have to figure out a way, like, how are we going to get the Hawk to rock out? And so we used some aluminum foil and wrapped it around the antenna of the radio and kind of coiled it up about a 25-foot rope of aluminum foil.
25 feet.
25 feet long, yep. Put a rock in the end of it to kind of weight it and then chucked it up in a tree, creating this mega antenna. And the Hawk came right on in and we rocked out all weekend long.
Was this a sober MacGyvering?
This was a collaborative, creative environment. I'll answer it that way.
Okay. So what is so special about the Hawk that you would build a 25-foot antenna to make sure that you could rock out to it 24/7?
Well, let me put it this way. One summer, they spent 24 hours only playing Lynyrd Skynyrd. What other radio station do you know that's going to do that?
None.
None, exactly.
When you turned on that radio and it came through, what was that moment like?
It was both glorious and disappointing. The glory was that we got it. The disappointing part was it was a U2 song. It's that one that's like, in the name of love. No offense to any of your listeners or Bono, but I'm not the hugest U2 fan.
Those might be one and the same, David.
That's true. Sorry. You're listener Bono. Yeah. Hey, Bono, I love the work you've done. Not a huge fan of the music.
Thanks, David.
You're so welcome.
It's a beautiful day.
It sure is. Yep.
If you have a burning question that you cannot find the answer to, call the helpline. 833-RING-ELT. That's 833-RING-ELT. Thanks to all our MacGyver callers.
Every Little Thing is produced by Aaron Reese, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Scored by Dara Hirsch, Bobby Lord, and Haley Shaw. Bono, if you're listening, call me. One man come in the name of love. Goodbye.